Asri Report on Sabah al-Muslim.
Well, I suppose you would have noticed by now, back to our regular programming here on Radio Islam International. Just gone a quarter past eight. You are listening to Sabah al-Muslim right here from our studios in Durban. I am Maulana Junaid Kasani, and a warm welcome to our listeners of Radio Al-Ansar as well at this hour, right till 10 o'clock. Asri Report it is, wherein we discuss social and political issues facing the landscape and the scenario of South Africa. And joining us for the Asri Report this morning, Assalamu alaikum, Angelo Fick.
Walaikum salam to you and to the listeners, Maulana Junaid.
Angelo, the MK Party, of course, been making headlines for a number of weeks and months now, having their own internal issues as of late, but seems to be on a winning streak in the courts, at least, over the last few weeks, having had their legitimacy as a contestant, or as a party and as a name, confirmed when the court ruled against the AEC, ANC's application against the IEC, and now having had the electoral court overturned the IEC's removal of Jacob Zuma on the list. I mean, is this a sign of things to come at the polls on 29th of May? More so, you know, in relation to the KZN platform of political events. Your thoughts on that, Angelo?
So I think it's important for us to bear in mind that court judgments are legal interpretations, and they're based on legal arguments, not necessarily always only on facts. And so while it may appear as if you have a set of court victories don't always translate into ballot box victories. There are two very different sets of judgments going on there. Voters will make their own decisions on the 29th of May, and it's important for all observers, including all South Africans, to distinguish between a party's ability to win arguments in a court of law on the interpretation of the law and their ability to appeal to millions of voters to vote for them. As for what it says about the internal dynamics of the MK party, I think that this is much more about spiting the African National Congress. This is much more, I think, focused on people disaffected with the ANC wishing to have a platform. And how that works out in KwaZulu-Natal is going to be interesting to watch, because at the last electoral conference for the African National Congress, KwaZulu-Natal looked as if many people from KZN branches felt as if they'd been removed from national politics. Now, for a province as populous as the KwaZulu-Natal province is, with its large population, this was always going to be a gamble for the ANC. And we've seen shifts in by-elections. We've seen shifts at the local government spaces, with first a decade ago the rise of the National Freedom Party, the resurgence of the Inkatha Freedom Party, and now the Democratic Alliance in the south of the province. So whether or not this will lead to a coalition which freezes out both the ANC and MK, or whether or not the ANC and MK have to come to some kind of compromise should they wish to have reins of power in KwaZulu-Natal, that remains to be seen. But I think these are important developments. It's important for us to bear in mind that these elections will be contested, and as I indicated some months ago, both ahead of the elections through the court system, during the elections, and once the results are announced, after those elections, we can likely see more challenges coming, particularly from the newer parties, if they do not deliver to their supporters the percentages that they're promising at the moment.
Angelo, throughout the processes that former President Mr. Zuma has been involved in, whether it was the Zondo Commission, whether it is his current emergence in the MK party, he has claimed his innocence, stating that he has never ever stolen a needle, and everything that he got was actually due to him, and also making it a point that his second term was actually interrupted, and apparently he seems to have some unfinished business. The emergence of the AMK to be begin with, and it's gaining popularity, which one cannot deny, in parts of KZN and even parts of Gauteng, for that matter, where there is a strong pro-Zuma ethnic culture that still continues to exist, even as far as Itegwini municipality is concerned. Could this be the phoenix rising from the ashes, or does this reveal something about our national politics that allows such type of, well, quote-unquote, unfinished business to be possibly addressed by a long time outgoing president?
So I think it does reveal something about our national politics. What we're seeing in South African politics is beginning to echo what we've seen elsewhere in the world in politics, where disaffected leaders, leaders who did not leave office under the best of circumstances, can, in democracies, can return to active politics and seek re-election. We see this with Donald Trump in the United States. We've seen it in other parts of the world. We're now seeing it in South Africa. What I think we need to be careful of is anticipating outcomes based on behavior that we have not yet seen. We haven't seen voters' responses to any of the parties on the 29th of May. And so it is important for us to wait until the voters have spoken for us to make a decision about how popular any or unpopular any party may or may not be. That said, Mr. Zuma certainly wants to be the phoenix rising from the ashes. But there are some contradictory statements that he makes. Let's not forget, this is the man who, when he was the president of the Republic of South Africa, once said the African National Congress comes first, because he was a member of the ANC before he was put in place as president of the Republic of South Africa. Now, for the most recent president of the party, other than Cyril Ramaphosa, to stand on a different party ticket reveals something about the state of the African National Congress, not just at the moment, but over the last 20 years, that this is an organization that could elect somebody to its highest office who is now standing in opposition to it. That says something about this party. And he's not alone. Several of the members of MK are disaffected members of the ANC. And this, I think, began with the split under Thabo Mbeki's departure into COPE, the subsequent split of the Youth League into the EFF, the many, many other splits into tiny parties now in Parliament, including the AIC, the ATM, and a bunch of others. And now this most significant shift in the political landscape affecting the African National Congress as its electoral fortunes are in decline, the establishment of a rival party by a former president of the party under a name that has been so dear to the party for at least the last 60 years. And so it's going to be interesting to watch how this works out. Whether Mr. Zuma is able to rise successfully is a different story, because he's also making promises outside courtrooms where he's, you know, pursuing for various forms of defense and prosecution to change the laws should he come to power. And this, I think, speaks to electoral promises that ignores the fact that we're a constitutional democracy. And so it remains to be seen whether or not the overturning by the electoral court of the IEC's findings will be taken to the constitutional court successfully, and whether or not that means that the MK party's victories over the last few weeks stand on the ballot, or whether or not something else has to happen before the 29th of May.
Focusing our attention on the Western Cape, not just so much the city of Cape Town, but the Western Cape in general. Now, the Western Cape has been, well, for just about over a decade, a safe hole for the Democratic Alliance. The Democratic Alliance has always lauded the Western Cape and cited the city of Cape Town as some sort of a model that every South African city can base its governance on. I mean, even in this current campaigning that's taking place, Mr. Steenhuisen and members of his party have gone to great lengths, you know, to highlight the improvements that have taken and continue to take place in the Western Cape. And one, of course, can't overlook the governance of the DA in that particular area, but at the same time being critical on them on other issues, especially, you know, spatial planning and why are some suburbs faring far, far better than other suburbs. But, you know, it seems that ahead of this election, the Democratic Alliance, they seem to be stirring up things a little, and not because of the opposition that they have between the ANC or even the AFF, from that matter, in the in the Western Cape, but rather quite often, more often than not, remarks that have taken place from the heads of the parties itself. I mean, we've heard Mr. Steenhuisen's remarks on the matters of Gaza when pushed and asked by that reporter what has been the traditional stance of the DNA, or on conflicts that are taking globally, but also as of recent, Mr. John Steenhuisen's remarks about other parties in the Western Cape and the responses by some of those parties to those remarks, which may be an indication that are you stirring up the old genre of the Swart Gevaar, the danger of the black opposition or black individuals coming into your playground? Your thoughts on that, Angelo?
So one would have thought, given the Democratic Alliance's stronghold in the Western Cape and given the weakness of the African National Congress over the last 10 years in that province, that the DA would focus on their own achievements. But Mr. Sienhuisen's remarks about newer and smaller parties coming for the Western Cape and warning voters that these people have nefarious intentions by implication is, I think, you know, an indication of just how insecure the DA itself must be feeling in the Western Cape. Let's not forget that over the last two elections, the general election of 2019 and the local government election of 2021, the DA's fortunes have risen. In fact, in the wake of Musi Maimane's departure from the party, and in the wake of that Ryan Kutsia-Tony Leon report, the party's reorientation towards what it calls its traditional liberal values have certainly seen a decline in electoral support in the Western Cape. Now, the problem here is that Mr. Steenhuisen's remarks are rather illiberal, and it speaks to some of the concerns one would have in looking at the behavior of the official opposition for the Republic of South Africa and a party that governs a significant province in the country. If you're going to return to your so-called traditional liberal values, you should welcome contestation from political parties in a liberal democracy, in a constitutional democracy. Secondly, to sketch the idea, and this harks back to precisely those ideas of Swart Gevaar, that the Western Cape is somehow the home for some people and not for others, and that migration in and across South Africa is somehow illegitimate politics, is, I think, to hark back to colonial and apartheid ideas of influx control. Now, we've had a moment before in the Democratic Alliance where another senior leader who's returned to the party used to refer to people as refugees. And as late as this week, a former mayor and member of, you know, the Democratic Alliance, who has since started her own party, Patricia de Lille went on television to debunk this idea, one, that the DA is necessarily governing much better. Two, there was a report that came out about how Cape Town is one of the spaces that is among the more corrupt in South Africa, alongside eThekwini, eKuruleni, and Johannesburg and Tshwane, and indicated that, in her words, in the Western Cape, the corruption is simply done with finesse, is I think the phrase she used. Mm-hmm. Instead of buying Gucci shoes, people are buying houses in Spain. Now, these kinds of inter-party conflicts that stem from intra-party conflicts, things that are now between parties, from people who used to fight inside the same parties, for the DA echoes much of what the ANC is facing. And so one finds it interesting that in the departure, the wake of the departure of so many people from the DA, Mr. Sienhuisen feels not just confident, but perhaps insecure enough to make these remarks, indicating a nervousness about whether or not the DA can pull back a majority and keep it in the Western Cape. And so I think on the 29th of May, voters will answer that question that he may be putting to his party, that his party may be putting to him, and give an answer. And if the DA is able to hold the Western Cape, which it's very unlikely to lose unless something significant shifts, you know, one would wonder why this nervousness, why this illiberal conduct, why the remarks about new players on the landscape, particularly the remarks aimed at Ryan Zansi, that strike one as odd for a party as securing government as they are supposedly in the Western Cape. And so again, no crystal ball, but the 29th of May will deliver answers to many of our questions about what is going on inside these parties and how they are or aren't able to appeal to ordinary South Africans.
Angelo Fake, thank you for joining us on Radio Islam International this morning with the Ashri Report, and have a good Juma ahead of you. Thank you for your time, Angelo. Shukran.
Shukran.
Well, that was Angelo Fake joining us with the Ashri Report.